We've had some great team meetings over the years, man. Some great ones. This is one that you're probably going to remember because I'm no longer your head coach.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program, available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. We got a good one in store for you today. Seated to my immediate left, ready to break down the LA Rams, the renaissance of Los Angeles pro football. Now we have 2.5 teams. The Raiders really never are too far away from some Angelino football fans' hearts. Now the Chargers are here, but of course 1 year ago, it was all about the LA Rams. And on Amazon, starting, depending on when you're listening, it could be tomorrow, it could be today, it could be last week. Either way, it is June 30th is the debut of All or Nothing Season 2, the great NFL film series. And here to help us break it down, Brian Baumgartner. We're debating my pronunciation because I'm from Pittsburgh. First of all, a couple things. Well, go ahead and say hello and how are you, sir?
Hello, it's great.
What a pleasure to see you.
So good to see you, yes.
What we just discovered in the moments running up to this, and Baumgartner is how you want me to say it.
Yeah, Baumgartner.
Baumgartner.
Yeah.
Baumgartner.
Yeah, Baum.
Baumgartner.
Yeah, that's good.
Like Baumgartner. Like Pittsburgh say, like Baumgartner, you know? Anyhow, let's not get bogged down with that.
It's Dameshek, right?
See, now I see how it feels.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
Yes, bitten by my own snake. Brian, of course, you know, he's a great NFL football fan, a golfer. That's what we were just talking about, is you're always up at that Tahoe tournament with multiple Shecky Award winner A.J. Hawk and the quarterback who I hail as the greatest I've ever seen, Aaron Rodgers, Charles Barkley, all the rest of the guys up there. You're departing to go and play golf. But, of course, everybody probably knows you best from The Office, Kevin, right?
Yes, that's probably true.
Is that all right? Because that's always a – I feel like, having been around the business of show for 15 or so years now, is that okay that's your signature role? How do you feel about that?
I feel great about it because I don't, like, love watching what I – do you listen to your podcast?
Not that often. Yeah. Once in a while, if I feel like it didn't go well, I'll go back and listen to it and hear if it was.
Okay, so that's kind of the same with me. Like, there's episodes of television or movies that I haven't seen. But The Office, I was a huge fan of that show myself, even though I was on it. It's not like self-aggrandizing. I just happen to think it's a brilliant show with a lot of funny people, most notably myself. But So I enjoyed that. So, of course, I don't mind. I mean, I think what's weird still is people who insist in social media to call me Kevin. That's weird, right? Because if they're following Brian Baumgartner or at BB Baumgartner, but then they refer to me as Kevin and address me as Kevin, that's a little weird.
Yeah, that's living in a state of arrested development on their end, right?
Yes.
Then again, I don't want to cast aspersions on anyone else, because I did once have a chance to interview Mark Hamill, and
you called him Luke.
Well, I mean, you know, come on. You got to allow me that. I had to replace his actual, Mark Hamill's actual bio with Skywalker's bio.
Okay. Well, so
I had to. Come on.
I posted a picture yesterday. I was shooting this film. I was dressed as a referee, right? So I post this picture. I'm dressed as a referee. I identified because I thought it was kind of funny. The referee's name is Chad Flags, right? So I said, hello, everyone. This is Chad Flags, right? Immediately, someone comments back, oh, so Kevin went from working to an office and owning a bar, and now he's a referee? No, that doesn't.
I see. I get the frustration. I mean, imagine.
It's not really frustrating, but yeah. It is a little eye-rolly. I'll put it that way.
I got you. All right, listen. You know what? Let's not eye roll about anything other than the what was, I guess, a bewildering first season for the LA Rams, and it's covered in great detail. 8 episodes worth, like I say, June 30th. Amazon is the place you track it down. The LA Rams, as opposed to season 1, if you watch season 1 of All or Nothing, this was covering the mighty Arizona Cardinals, good times, Bruce Arians, and everything else. This is sort of the yang to last year's yin, if you will, and no less fascinating, perhaps even more so. I guess, you know, conflict is the key to any good drama, right? And there's a lot of bad times going on here.
It's sort of Shakespearean, right? Like, everyone dies by the time it's over in this weird way. It's so fascinating.
If Hamlet had a mullet and a cop mustache.
He doesn't have a mullet anymore. Come on. I'm going to defend that.
It's Fisher, a little mullety on Coach Fisher, no?
I think it's more of a flip. Maybe I'm defensive about it because my hair gets a little long and starts flipping a little. That's not mullet.
No.
You had a mullet?
Yeah.
Shut up.
There's our pal Ike Taylor. Okay. So let's jump into it here.
Okay.
And like I say, extraordinary stuff. I mean, the thing that really jumped out at me, but before I got into any of the context of what was happening in the season, you just heard at the very top of the show, Jeff Fisher coming into into all the players and announcing to him, hey, I'm not your coach anymore. And but beyond that, the NFL Films people, and we'll talk to Keith Cosgrove later on as we continue to cover this series along with Brian. This will be a 5-part series, as a matter of fact, here
oh,
on the DVD.
I'm here for five.
That's right.
Yes.
That's, if you wish to be.
Okay. We'll see how today goes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's play it by ear. You're okay. Right. Let's see if I can master the vagaries of the pronunciation of your surname. Either way, the films, the people who shoot it must really love the return to L.A. for football because the golden light is so is so heavenly.
It's so pretty,
isn't it? And no matter what, even when you're watching it, that you watch whoever it is, the Falcons rolling over. Really, that was it. That was the denouement of Jeff Fisher's career. Is that right? Am I using denouement properly?
I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He even then, they're getting whipped. It's embarrassing and everything else. And the thing that stole my eye more than anything else was like, oh, look at that beautiful Southern California light as the sun setting. Anywho,
it's really bad when that's what you're looking at, though.
There weren't a whole lot of points scored by the Goff / Keenum offense of 2016. So that's one storyline that we'll look to. And I will let you know that as this series progresses, the climactic episode is the transition now into 2017, and it starts way back with, like we say, with Fisher and the experience of the move, which was really taxing. I think a lot of people would point to that it's not an easy thing to up and move your franchise over the course of an offseason and not have it put a dent into you negatively.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that stood out. Well, two things. One is, and you know, NFL Films, they're so good at what they do, and you know, how they've constructed this show, you know, moving back to L.A. and all of this promise and really starting the show, which you would think would be optimistic, we're starting the season. They start the entire series with Jeff Fisher delivering the news to his players that he's been fired. And it gets the whole show off to this really interesting, because it's then building, the whole show is building toward that moment. But the toll that it took on everybody, the move from St. Louis. They talk about in the show at one point that there are 3 moves in 7 months. I count 4. I mean, they move from St. Louis, and then they move to Oxnard, and then they move to Irvine for camp, and then they move to Cal Lutheran to sort of set up this temporary permanent home for the next 3 years before the stadium is built. And then the NFL – in like week 4, I think, sends them to London to, you know, because they haven't had enough of the moving. I don't know. I think it's, to me, one of the great questions, and what's so fascinating to watch is why. I mean, they start out 3-1 after getting blown out in the first game, looking just horrendous against the 49ers. They lose 28-0, and then they win the next 3 games.
Including against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes, and Arizona, who at the time, I think we thought they were going to be better than they were. And then it just all falls apart.
You're right, and I guess the two biggest parts, well, with all due respect to William Hayes and his lack of belief in prehistoric beasts, I think the two seminal moments of the season are Jeff Fisher getting fired and the drafting of Jared Goff and his progress or lack thereof and the sticking with Keenum longer than a lot of the fans would have wanted them to. What do you think as we look back now? I guess that's a good place to start because that was the big decision that outside of moving from the Midwest to Southern California, taking Jared Goff. As we sit here now, fair or otherwise, what do you think about Jared Goff? Was that the right thing to do with that first overall pick?
Well, I think, you know, and they talk about this a little bit in the season, and maybe this should be obvious because they made that huge trade and gave up so much to move up. They make it really clear in sort of a couple of sentences in the show that they did it because of Goff. Like, it wasn't like we need a franchise quarterback, and there was a lot of talk about the two quarterbacks and which one we should. They make it really clear they saw Goff, they wanted Goff, and they were going to give up whatever they needed to get Goff. It seems to me in the league that it has worked out really well for teams to groom players. I mean, Aaron Rodgers obviously is sort of the one right now that jumps to mind, but it was so difficult with Case and they weren't scoring any points. And so there was fans wanted to bring in Goff and probably it was because of Philadelphia Eagles. Wentz was doing so well.
Right.
So, right. I mean, I think that made people feel like we've made the wrong
choice.
That's
a great point. Yeah, that's right. While across the country, one state in our union had changed its name at least temporarily to Wentzylvania. I guess Rams fans would probably feel that way. Well, first of all, Case Keenum, it's sort of a requirement, I guess, if you're going to be in that situation, like just sit on the bench and learn that Case Keenum has to be as nice a guy as he is. And
he is a super nice guy.
He seems like he is consistently encouraging and a nice guy. And that really is one of my favorite moments in the series. And you've watched all eight now.
Yes.
I watched only three so far because I'm dumb and I will get confused about what episode it was and I don't want to make allusions to episode. What episode are we talking about? This streamlines it for Dumb Dave a little bit.
Right.
I think in episode six, I think Keenum comes, he's really focusing on the details with the kid. Goff gets a bloody nose early in the game and Keenum comes over to him on the sideline. He's like, just let that thing go because the blood coming out of your nose will present a nice J.J. Watt image for you. And I think, and he's kidding around, I was thinking, savvy move, vet. That's
right.
What you want.
Right.
Now, what's anybody going to say? Nobody's going to say the kid's not trying hard if he's all smeared in blood and mud and everything else.
Right.
It's a winning move for with the fan base.
It is, yeah.
You know?
But why do you think, well, look, I think if everybody had their choice, Goff probably wouldn't have played at all. That's what I think.
I agree with that, and you allude to the way the Packers did it, and that is probably in the 21st century. I'm trying to think if there's another great example of this. I guess Alex Smith, kind of the guy who he was also drafted the same year. Both guys who it took a while, which isn't to say Aaron Rodgers, if the Packers would have drafted him and under different circumstances, you couldn't have just dropped him in there. I don't know how he would have done, but sitting there learning at the knee, one of the all-time greats, Brett Favre and everything else, didn't hurt Aaron Rodgers
right,
in all likelihood. And Alex Smith, I think, is sort of the personification that every – just because Cam Newton, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Ryan went in their rookie seasons and took off immediately, RG3, I guess, as well, you would lump in there. Doesn't mean that that's got to be the path for every quarterback if they're going to be successful.
Well, Ben didn't start the year, though, right?
He didn't – no. Tommy Maddox actually got the gig, but in week two, Maddox got hurt in Baltimore. Roethlisberger went in, and that's when his winning streak went all the way through the season until the title game against those Patriot guys.
Well, and Fisher kept saying, and he took a lot of heat in the press for this, he kept saying that Case Keenum gave them the best chance to win. And then when he suddenly flipped, I think there was a lot of scorn about that. Like, oh, okay, so last week he wasn't, now suddenly he's the guy and he's ready. It wasn't people in the stands chanting, we want Goff, right? But I don't know. Case was, I mean, he had some great games. A couple, right?
He had a couple good games. I thought that was another great moment, though. I mean, really, you talk about the access, and that's really what All or Nothing is about, is are these moments that you otherwise – I mean, you
– don't
you
get to see.
Yeah, you maybe remember, maybe you were in the stands at the Coliseum, maybe you were watching it on TV or however you consumed it at the time. It's fascinating to match up as the crowd is chanting, "We want Goff, we want Goff." Keenum just threw a terrible pick in the Coliseum, that the QB coach, the receiver coach turns to the OC and says, "We got to do something about the quarterback situation," right? Like, I mean, in the middle of the game.
I know.
Just disgusted. But just downright like, what are we doing already, everybody? We can't keep doing this.
Yeah. Well, then that, and you just alluded to it, that what this show does is it lets us see things that we've never seen before. I mean, you know, with Hard Knocks, we saw a lot in, you know, of the training camp stuff. But in the middle of the season and having access, the first thing that we talked about here, having access to see the speech and to see the moment that Fisher tells everybody he's been fired. I mean, really, the only thing we didn't see was the phone call that when Jeff got.
Yeah, right.
When he got the call that he was fired. But we see him tell his coaches, and then we see him go in and tell the team. And then the after, and then he walks out.
It really is legitimately fascinating, but a little creepy, too. You almost feel like, are we supposed to be watching this? This is a bad moment in another human being's life.
Right.
That we're watching him walk into the room and how he comports himself. And obviously, we're informed as he walks in what he's about to do. It's interesting to say the least. Let's break that down. How that whole thing goes there,
okay.
And they really do pour over it in the, you know, the like we say, it's the first thing you see in the series, but then they go back to it and go
and focus into
episode 6 is really something. The standalone and look at that, just that kind of get in. You know, I haven't seen every episode yet, but I mean that is
episode 6 is unbelievable.
I mean, it's right where it's at.
Yes.
I mean, that's I'm not the sweet spot for Jeff Fisher, the sour spot, but you know, it really in terms of the drama that unfolds there. First of all, Jeff Fisher walks into the room. He lays it on the entire guy, everybody in the Rams locker room, all the players. Well, wait. First, he goes to the coaching staff.
He tells the coach's staff. Yes.
And it's funny the way he does. What the psychology of how he lays it out?
Yeah. Well, to me, you asked what moment, and we were discussing this a little bit before. But he finishes the speech to the coaches, and Mike Singletary stands up and walks up and just shakes his hand. Very simply.
Come on, brown noser. Come on. He just got fired. You know, you don't have to impress him. He's the only guy you don't have to impress. Who's this show for? Like. I just have to get up and shake your hand in front of everybody else so I can remain the teacher's pet. I don't know. What's his angle on this one?
But
I would have said something out loud. I would have been like, oh, come on, Mike. Come on, man. That's not cool. Like now, so now Jeff Fisher will remember you above all the rest of us. Real nice singer.
Right. Thank you.
Come on, player.
The other thing that stood out for me was how many tears. Just how much legitimate emotion, and you start thinking about, you know, I mean, not to reference like the television show that I was on for a long time, but The Office, we talked a lot about these are the people that you're spending all of your time with. If you're, whether you're shooting a television show or, you know, on a professional team, I mean, you're spending hours and hours, way more than family. And the show goes into that as well. You know, coaches are sleeping in their offices. They're not seeing their families. At one point, you know, the Rams go to London and you sort of hear from John Fossil, one of the assistants. He basically hasn't seen his kids in 3 weeks because he's been sleeping at the office. Or, you know, he ran home to, like, take him to the beach for a couple of hours one afternoon after the game and then went back to his office to prepare for the next week. And so just the emotion behind just the human element of and feeling towards Jeff, and that they're all there because Jeff brought them there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other thing about these aren't disparate coaches who have all been hired to do a specific job. I mean, they really, you know, stay together, and their job and their livelihood is tied to him. So it's also that they don't know what's up with them now. Like, if mm-hmm. Jeff is gone, they probably don't have a job next year.
It's true. And you know, like you just you sort of made the analogy, And I don't think it's outrageous with, you know, working on a TV show. You always hear that the relationships are more intense because there's a shorter time frame. Remember, if you're on a TV show or on a movie set or on a sports team, you aren't there 12 months a year. You don't. It doesn't.
Right.
You know, maybe absence makes the heart grow fonder, but there is something to the intensity of the relationships, and then you kind of move on. And that's the experience of pro football, is that a lot of those guys, they understand that they're moving pieces to some degree, and the goal is to see if you can hold as long as possible. That's the game. As
right.
I always say, I'll reference a TV show I worked on.
Okay.
When I was writing on the Kimmel show, there was that feeling of like, wow, you're really getting over, because this is a 12-month thing. You know, this is the golden goose, because you don't shut down for, you know, 3 months or 4 months or whatever. You're always there. But otherwise, yes, that is the vibe always, is that you always are aware the sword of Damocles is hanging around
right.
somewhere, right?
Totally. Yeah.
And so then when it falls, the Jeff Fisher psychology of going in and saying, so you guys have a tough week coming up. Friday, this is what's going to be, and then this is going to happen, and this, and he'll take care of this, because I just got fired.
Right.
It's very
right.
dramatic.
Right, right.
He knew the camera was rolling. He doesn't like – if it was me, I would walk in, I would throw my shoe against the wall and be like, they just fired me! Instead, he does this bit like, and by the way – I'm out. How does that strike you, everybody? Singletary gets up and shakes his hand. And I think you're right that the coaches are all there because Fisher hired them, but
right.
also because of the nature of the business. No, I found it interesting that no one, and I kind of read Singletary's move, is kind of like, so, yeah, that's bad news there, Coach Fisher. Who's the head coach now? Which is it? One of us? Does it get to be one of us, or like, do we still keep our? Fisher doesn't immediately go through like, don't worry, you're all fine. They said they're keeping all of you. He like lets that twist for a minute.
Oh, that's right. Oh, I forgot about that.
It's crazy. It's a funny psychology yeah. that Fisher probably inadvertently wasn't like, watch me mess with these guys. But there is something too, like. The body language, you see John Fossil, as soon as you see it hits the news, it's like he just got shot. Like he like falls back in his chair.
Yep.
But you wonder if like Dave McGinnis, who's done it, who's actually been a head coach, Jeff, you wonder if McGinnis is kind of like, do I get to be the head coach the rest of the way here now? Like, I mean, that's a bad news, Coach Fish. But, like, I mean, I have Whoa. Experience, so I don't know.
Right.
Everybody's watching on closed caption back there. Kevin Demoff. Can do a lot worse than a guy who's been around the block once or twice.
Right.
Right?
Well,
Singletary
yeah.
wants the gig, probably.
Well, yeah, they all do.
Greg Williams wants the gig.
But they also may be thinking, like, is it too soon to use my cell phone? I got some calls that I need to make.
I'm too upset about this, Coach Fisher. I got to take a moment to myself.
I got
to
go.
I left my cell phone on the desk. Yeah, I'm too messed up. Yeah,
yeah
I'll be back.
Yeah, I'll be right back in a second. Find me a job.
And he is very like, don't worry about me, you know. Like,
yes. But now, okay, now we're I interrupted.
I feel
but
bad for him.
We're
no,
being
I,
funny. Yes. You do. And I think that they do too.
I do. No, I'm not making fun, but amidst all that, that's the legitimate dynamic in their heads. They're human beings. Of course, that's what's spinning. I'm consumed by my grief for you. Of course, there's some percentage that's thinking, like, wonder what this means for me now. Surely that's the case.
Okay. But now, certainly for the players, and you referenced this earlier, like when he tells the players, there've got to be some guys who are like, oh, yeah, thank God.
But they all,
yes, they all play it very correctly.
Every guy in the locker room does some variation, or in the meeting room does some variation of putting their head down to weep, either sincerely or pretend. Johnny Hecker, you can tell that Jeff Fisher, that his reputation has always been in the NFL, that he's a player's coach. And
yes.
You can tell that there's a legitimate percentage of the guys in that locker room that have real affection for him and really believe in him as a football guy and all that kind of stuff. Johnny Hecker gets up and is legitimately weeping. And I thought also William Hayes is interesting.
Yes.
In that episode, in episode six, about he basically foretells Jeff Fisher's firing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he when they, it was the Falcons, right? Was it right after the Falcons game?
Yeah.
Or even the game before that?
It might have even been at halftime, because Todd Gurley gets up at halftime of the Falcons
and
game.
And goes nuts.
And, yeah, that's pretty interesting stuff, too, that you get little snapshots along the way. That, I mean, that's, again, that inside access that you just, that the mics just plain don't pick up. No matter, you know, as many cameras as there are with the national broadcast coverage and all the people there on the sidelines, you still don't get those intimate moments. Like, I just off the top of my head, I'm just thinking of Tom Brady. I love hearing what the two QBs say to each other, even if it's completely vapid stuff. Like Tom Brady just says to the kid, like, what is Tom Brady, the most successful QB in NFL history, what does he say to a rookie who really isn't playing very well so far?
Yeah.
Like, what's he say? He's like, good luck, guy.
Good luck. Good luck, guy.
Good luck, man. No, keep going.
I know, it was really interesting.
Like, but wouldn't you feel compelled face to face to be like, "Hey, you're gonna be all right in this
Jared,
league, man."
Yeah, I know.
But he didn't.
No,
do
he
that.
Didn't. No, he just totally kind of dismisses.
So yes, yeah, so they get whipped by the Patriots. And
I think
see
I,
that.
Yeah. So, the other thing that struck me, and we'll dive into more of this later, but they are in so many games at the beginning of the year. I mean, they get blown out by the 49ers, and then they win three games, and you're like, okay. And we'll talk more about that later. But anyway, against the Falcons, it must have been against the Falcons, where William Hayes says, people are going to lose their jobs over this.
Mm-hmm.
People are not going to survive this. We can't do this. And maybe it was halftime.
It's a recurring theme, because Benny Cunningham gets everybody together. That might have been the first episode. Either way, yeah, he basically on the practice field gets like 25, 30 guys around him and is talking about, hey, these mistakes have to end. You know, I'm not trying to attack you. You're all grown men. This is Benny Cunningham. He's not the star of the team or anything, but he is clearly one of the leaders. And he is, you know, this is, you're grown men. You have to take care of things. But this is how I feed my family, he talks about.
Oh, yes,
you know?
That's right. Yes,
I can't lose my job. I don't want to lose my job. You guys better start thinking about it that way. We're all going to lose our job. And it is because they're a bad team. The 2016 Rams were not a particularly good team. I'm fascinated by the recurring platitudes we hear, and they fall flat because they're, you know, you can't talk us into being better. Yeah, is what emerges for me. You know, really.
Yes, and the same talk. Like, we have to get this going,
guys. Well, who are we now? We're down three touchdowns. I mean, really, that's the Falcons speech. Todd Gurley, how are we going to respond? And Greg Williams, as they come out onto the field for the second half of that Falcons game, really, again, the seminal game, probably, because that's when.
Yes.
I think everybody said, "We can't. This is
that, we have to do.
He's
something.
Lost the team. You know, he's yeah. the team is flat out just laying down. They're down to it, and that really, who are we going to be? Rhetorically asked at halftime, we're down three touchdowns, but you're still professionals. Who do you want to be now? Well, I guess they tell him, you know, this is who we are, and that's why they have to show Fisher the door. I found that you know, it's too bad for Fisher, but it really is a decisive moment that's. That their inability to respond. Yes, our backs are to the wall. Our dignity is on the line.
Right.
All right, well, they're going to hang another 30 on us in the second half right now. You know?
Right. Well, but I think the show also, what by giving us so much inside, it's fascinating to me the question of why. Like, we talked about it a little bit before. Is it just that they don't have that they didn't have a QB? Right, and maybe Goff becomes the guy, but in that, you know, is that position so important, and their ability to score points was so lacking? But you know, there were games the defense, you know, that's playing unbelievable for games at a time, and then they give up 50 points.
Yeah,
you know, they give up against the Saints, they give up 49 to the Saints, 26 to the Patriots, and then 42 to the Falcons, like right in a row, and you go, well, that's not a QB issue, right? Like, that's, I mean, obviously they need some help, you know, because they're winning games. What was it, 9-3? Is that what they beat the Seahawks at the beginning of the year? But
Panthers game as well. I mean,
you do
wonder. You really do wonder. And you know, our mutual pal AJ Hawk. We really should get Hawk because and kibitz with him a little bit about this because he was around. Pretty consistently winning situations. But I do wonder always about that dynamic, and I do like talking to players about that. It's easy to say, we're a team, and we all are working towards one goal and all that. But if you're on the Rams defense in 2016, at some point you do have to.
Right.
Aaron Donald is the other thing that jumps out, or there are many things that jump out at me, and I have just a couple of notes here for this one for our conversation today. But one thing that I do want to mention is when you watch pretty much every episode, but he's playing the NFC champion Carolina Panthers, and their offensive line wasn't as good, but Aaron Donald blows up every play. It's amazing how dominant he is. But so you have Aaron Donald out there, and you have, really they had some injuries, but Robert Quinn's out there for some of it. And when he's alongside of Aaron Donald, I mean, that's a real dynamic duo out there. I mean, they have pieces all over defensively. At some point, I wonder if we can read into that and say, well, if the offense is not going to show up, it must be some sort of figurative gut punch to the defense. Like, well,
right.
No matter what we do, it's unlikely to be where they – and now as once you start to see the reality of 3-1 in the rearview mirror and we're not going to be playing in January, you wonder as human beings, do they sort of take their foot off the gas a little bit?
Totally, yeah. Well, yeah. And I think, again, you're addressing it right now, like bringing up one of the other ideas. Is it the quarterback situation? But even the defense inability to get motivated because they're bad, is that still the quarterback's fault? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
If they can't get motivated because the offense is just completely incapable of scoring points, is it that they can't perform or they're unwilling to perform? And what, you know, how much does psyche come into play, you know, week to week to week to week to week, you know, with no bye?
It's a lot of serious people who talk about football. They scoff at the idea of the desire, you know, like I laugh at the phrase, hey, this one's going to come down who wants it more. Well, it's the Super Bowl. I think they both want to win, right? I mean,
right.
I don't think anybody want. I don't think either side is kind of like, whatever, you know, at least we got a week's vacation, you know, like I think they all probably after the preceding 5-6 months of toil probably want to win pretty badly. But there is something to that, the human element of wanting to. And if you're, say, for instance, now the Jacksonville Jaguars going into 2017. And it's not just a rookie. Now it's a guy who was drafted highly in Blake Bortles. If he doesn't perform, how cross are the defensive guys going to be? And
right.
the nice receiving core that they have. And Leonard Fournette. And how much in a sport where the physical attrition that is inherent to every play, obviously you're running into giant human beings, how much does Leonard Fournette want to continue to get touches? Like,
right.
This is meaningless. I talked to Maurice Jones-Drew is in here all the time. How do you continue to care in week 14 and 15 on a bum team? Well, I'd be like, hey, coach, my ankle hurts. I don't think I can go. That really would start to happen. And it then becomes about the individual. Like Maurice will tell you, it's personal pride. You know,
right.
You want to do it, and it's your job. Like you're
right.
getting paid to do it. If you don't show up, then that follows you in your next stop. But still, yes.
But you can have pride, and you can want, you know, because it's your job to perform. But if you've got another guy, another team that's across from you, who does have more to play for? I don't think for the Super Bowl it's who wants it more. I think that's dumb. I'm with you. But on a week-to-week basis, you know, where the team is, how many weeks in a row they've traveled. I mean, that's another part of this show that I feel like we got to see the toil that takes
mm-hmm.
physically and emotionally in terms of being away from their families and being on the road and packing. You know, at one point they take an 11,000-mile trip, you know, to Detroit and then directly to London, and they're gone for 2 weeks and 17-hour time differences and all of this stuff. It's like how can you
for real
succeed?
And these guys yes, it's their job to go and show up in a losing situation.
Yeah,
I mean, again, so The Office is a bad comparison because that show was always good. So you weren't ever going into work like, oh my god, did you see the ratings last night?
but
we gotta go do that. Look at that. Did you see the script for this week? Who wrote this junk? I'm a pro. Gotta go deliver that. Gotta go deliver that mess.
Well, but yeah, but I think you're exactly right. I think you do that, and you are a pro. And like, for myself, it's like, well, I don't want to be bad because that's out there forever. Just like these footage on these players are out there forever. But you know, when you're taking a break, you might not be participating. Well, they talk in this about like they say, let's make it about fellowship.
All watch the first episode of Lord of the Rings, everybody.
No.
That'll put us all in the right frame of mind.
In this show, they say, like, we're not making the playoffs. So I think it's Fossil at that point says, like, you know, put your cell phones down a few extra minutes. Like, look a guy in the face because you're not going to be with the same group ever again. This is it. Mm-hmm. This is your time, which I thought, again, was a very sort of interesting idea, you know, whether it's a motivational tactic or something that's real, right? Because if we're going to have a better show, to talk about The Office again, we're going to have a better show if we all get along better and if we're all spending our time doing fellowship together as opposed to shoot a scene, get on my phone and talk to my agent about finding me something else to do, please. Right? I mean,
yeah.
It's completely natural. And again, what is the defense saying? Like, get me out of LA, man. We can't win here. I'm getting killed. Or
I'm trying to think of my brain is veering into TV. Who is the Aaron Donald equivalent of TV?
Oh boy.
Who is dominant and great and like, that's the show he's stuck in? That's too bad for that guy. He deserves better than that because that guy's super funny and he's doing that. There are plenty of people like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to answer that question. But yeah, no, you're right for sure.
I'm going to call you Kevin if you don't.
No. No, it's right. I mean, well, who's the MVP on the Rams?
All right.
I think it's Hecker. Quite frankly, I mean, he's probably the best.
That's never a good sign
position.
When your punter though is getting outsized accolades the nation over, that's probably not a good sign for the overall quality of your football team.
Right, Donald for sure. But what about Gurley? He didn't. His skills didn't deteriorate that much between year one and year two. Like, what? So what is it? Was that drive? Was that schemes? Was that everybody loading it in the box? Because, again, they knew they didn't have a quarterback that could beat them. I don't know.
Yeah, practically right. In his sophomore year, I know there was no offensive line. But, that's something that I feel like carries through all the episodes is the – again, like you say, what resonates and then what's just empty platitudes and that whole like, you got to be a man in fellowship. Now let's do it because of pride. And like, oh, man, I've been hearing it for 3.5 months now. I don't care anymore. Like, let's just go play. But the added not small element of as opposed to like, hey, today we're shooting the episode today. Is, 300-pound men are going to run into you at full speed.
Right. Right.
How much you can really, like, I really am not up for this at all. I'm going to hurt tomorrow from this, and I know we're not going to win, and we're not going to the playoffs, It really does require some spine and some decency to not then get in front, or maybe self- goes back to like you're protecting yourself as a professional, and that maybe that's ultimately what gets in the way of you saying, like getting into a microphone and being like, "Yeah, we're fine if the QB would start to play." Like that, you rarely hear that because probably it would do damage to the guy saying it as much as it would hurt the feelings of the quarterback.
Well, yeah, then you wouldn't be a team guy. And I mean, I do think that throughout the show you see that. I mean, it's weird because I think I imagine teams that appear to be in sort of disarray. Because by the Falcons game, take away the show All or Nothing, like as you're watching, you're like, well, clearly some change has got to be made because they don't.
Everybody's just yelling and swearing anymore. A lot at that point.
Yeah. But as you watch the show, you do get the sense that they're trying, but it's a bizarre, like, they're trying really hard, or they're saying they're trying hard, or they don't have the ability. I don't know. It's very fascinating to watch. Again, like Shakespeare, just everything falling apart. Everything looked so pretty in the beginning, and there's the king and all of his servants, and there's, you know.
Macbeth didn't, though. He didn't wear Sally Jesse Raphael style red frame glasses. That's another dig at Jeff Fisher's fashion. he does. What kind of leader of men walks in the Sally Jesse Raphael editions, right?
I hear you. Right. He also likes flip flops. He does. That's his shoe choice.
That's a step up from former Falcons coach Mike Smith in the Tevas. Giving his like, we gotta toughen up, and his curse laced opening speech of training camp in Hard Knocks a few years ago is undermined by the Tevas. Like, coach, I mean, I can't take you serious. Can you put on some combat boots or something? I'll take penny loafers. Anything would be an upgrade. Speaking of fashion, it's time for Over Undies, presented by Me Undies. You've perfected your wardrobe. That's clear looking at you, Brian. But yes. What about the stuff not everybody gets to see? Me Undies now offering 20% off your first pair. But please do use our special URL, MeUndies.com/DDFP. Like I say, 20% off your first pair. Over Undies. All or Nothing edition. The first episode of All or Nothing begins with the news of Jeff Fisher's firing in December of 2016. This high head coach turnover rate has been a trend for the team since they were the Cleveland Rams in 1936. Over Undy, Brian, 23. How many head coaches has the Rams organization fired since 1936? Have they had, I guess, since 1936, including McVay?
23
over
since 36.
Undies. Yeah.
It's over undies. It's over.
You are correct. It's 28 total. Wow. I don't know. That seems pretty bad when you consider that what are we at? We're in 2017. So over about 80 years, they've had 28 coaches.
That is pretty bad.
Yeah, there's a lot of like 2 and 3 year, 1 year.
Well, there have to be a ton of that,
yeah.
Right?
Dude,
I'm bad at math, but that seems like the average is what? Is about like 2.5 years for a coach?
That's really bad, but I guessed it right, so I win.
Why is it?
Right.
Well, that's what we'll get into.
That's
that.
That's what matters here.
Let's jump in on that on a later one, but because it does sort of color the entire season. Obviously, as we talk about here, the coaches and the big personalities of Greg Williams and the guys who have been around. It is interesting that they do stand out, and I don't just think it's facial recognition on our part. Greg Williams and Dave McGinnis. They stand out more than the other guys in the room, probably because they've been around it more and they own the room a little bit more. But it is interesting that the NFL teams that don't have much success or don't have a real big track record of success don't just look across to the other sideline and say, "Oh yeah, look, Mike McCarthy's been there forever now. You know, Mike Tomlin's been there for a decade now. Belichick and so on." Like, I know that. If you don't meet with success, the trick is that those guys have now established a routine of success. But still, like, 1 or 2 or 3 years is just not enough.
That's
apparently
not enough. Yeah.
You know?
No, I know.
All right. Anything you want to say before we wrap it up here? Because we have a lot to kibitz about, and we'll do so. Like I say, we have 4 more episodes of DDFP covering 7 more episodes of All or Nothing. Again, Amazon, the place to go, June 30th if you're listening the day before. Otherwise, go to Amazon at your leisure, sit down, drink in, you know, one episode, four. It's easy to fall down the rabbit hole.
Oh, it is. Yes.
And just start going all the way through.
I think, and you know, we'll talk about more specific moments as we go further, but I think that there was a moment that struck me, which is totally different than what we've been talking about. But in terms of what the show enables us to see in terms of actual football that takes place in preparation, and there was something against the Cardinals. And so you see it from the idea where the coaches identify that the Cardinals are not lining up fast enough on defense. And they put in, and so you see them in practice working on a play they call Cheetah, right? Fast, a fast animal, that makes sense. And then you see them in the game, you see them identify what is happening with the Cardinals, you see them, you know, from the offensive coordinator, call Cheetah, you see them in the huddle, call Cheetah, they get up, they call Cheetah, the Cardinals aren't ready, and they score a touchdown. And there's something that this show enables us to do that we don't get, even though we know that Troy Aikman and everybody, and they have their pregame talks, and they talk about certain things, and so we hear that from the announcers when we watch a game. But the access that we have here for little football moments like that, to me, as a football fan, is just awful.
It is a fascinating marriage of what happens during the week and then how it presents itself, and then it's colored by you can hear the analyst, the radio analyst of the Rams, are Maurice Jones-Drew. You hear him chiming in just before the play. I think this, he does that against in the waning moments against the Jets. He foretells Alec Ogletree, and then they're cutting away to Ogletree's wife or girlfriend in the stands.
Right,
picks it off again, and the game's over. And by the way, 9-6 against the Jets. Rams-Jets, 9-6, Bryce Petty versus Case Keenum. One to remember. But they make it interesting somehow. That's the trick of it.
I know, right?
Somehow out of the context of, like, the Rams stink, you know? Like, this is a bum season or whatever. And when you remove yourself from that and just look at it standing alone,
it's
as
drama.
You say, there's some weird there's a human drama playing out, a human tragedy on some level.
Well, tragedy, yeah.
Oh! Wait, before we wrap it up, this is way at the end of this episode. Do we want to let's save that for a top of episode discussion coming up? Jeff Fisher struggles with the red challenge flag.
Okay, well,
because I feel
time.
Like that
we'll get some video. Yeah.
I think that was the thing. We got to get audio of that. That was great. Anything else? I just want to make sure I don't miss talking about anything else. Oh yeah, I mean, to me, the highlight or in the top five highlights. Because you wonder if you're a fan of a team and you're like, they got to change the QB. Why don't they do that? That in the coach's box during the game, that two position coaches are talking to each other like, we got to do something.
We got to do something about the quarterback.
This is crazy already, right? Like, and he's mad. Like, it's not like, what do you think? He's like, we got to do something already. Rush, sheesh, already. I can't take it.
Right.
How that then affects his position group and what he's like. Sorry, Tavon Austin. I put in a good word for a new quarterback, but they weren't.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Anyway,
well, okay.
Go ahead, please.
No, and those shots that you get of that of the access to those coaches up in the box too. So much of that is, and how many times during the season where at the end of the game they're acting just like throwing their stuff down. And walking out of the room with 30 seconds left, and it's crazy.
I do, and I don't want to pretend I'm some. I don't want to be a pretentious football insider guy, but and I say it a lot, and I know that people theoretically grasp this, but what it really shows, if there's one thing you can say about what All or Nothing shows us, is it serves as a reminder, and maybe that's what's going to be the best thing about 2016 Rams as the team in All or Nothing is. It's fun to see the good teams and the good times they're having, but it does remind you, like, maybe it'll give you a little bit of pause next time before you say, like, that guy should be thrown out. He should get another job or whatever. Like, these are human beings. And the trickle down of Case Keenum throwing an interception and how it impacted
his impacted his family, his wife,
and the guys around him, and then the conflict of like, well, I have to be a good teammate, but really, this guy isn't helping us win, and if I don't win, then I'm going to get kicked to the curb, and you can feel that that negative energy and it permeating through all the coaches and the it's something to watch.
Yes,
but like I say, it feels voyeuristic in a fun way and kind of like, wow, I can't believe some of the stuff we're looking at.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're supposed to see this.
Yeah. My first response to seeing Jeff, I mean, you brought it up earlier, but my very, very first response before saying, like, this is unbelievable, was watching him tell them that he's been fired is, and the way he says it, I know they played at the very beginning, but we've had a lot of great meetings. We've had a lot of great meetings over the years. This is one you're going to remember. Like, that's how he tells them.
Yeah, let's listen to it one more time while we wrap it up.
We've had some great team meetings over the years, man. Some great ones. This is one that you're probably going to remember because I'm no longer your head coach.
The way that sentence structure is fascinating.
I know, right?
He didn't say, I'm no longer your coach, so you're going to remember this. No, it's
– Yeah, no, yeah.
He has a sense of – he has a flair for the dramatic, doesn't he? Yes, yeah. Wow, Shakespeare would like that, I think.
There you go.
All right, listen. Brian Baumgartner.
Well done.
That was good?
Yeah.
That was better pronunciation?
Oh, no, it was great. It's all-
Let's get Hawk on the line. Let's
we're
going to
get Hawk. Yep.
His jersey hangs behind your head there, Brian. As you can see, he's a Shecky Award winner. You've just earned yourself a spot. You're going to be nominated for our favorite non-football playing guest.
Unbelievable.
By year's end, 2017. Maybe your year ends better. Your 2017 ends better than the Rams' 2016 did. There we go. There's the music.
Again. Yeah, that's
right. You know, they call that.
They didn't time it out.
Yeah, it's on them. That's exactly right. See, Damashek's not classy like a lot of the guys on the Rams and just accept the blame. That's always somebody else's fault. You understand?
No,
that's
I understand.
That's how to do things. Right.
No, that's
wasn't
well
me.
Done. Well done. What do I get
now,
if I win?
Now we just wait. Oh, you'll see. You'll find out.
Really?
It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Awesome.